And a very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07, and you're tuned to Midday Matters right here on WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Glad to be with you after your Super Bowl weekend. Hope your team won, or at least did well. We won't pass judgment here. With me in the studio, as usual, Fort Wayne News Sentinel's Bob Kaler. Bob, how are you this afternoon?
Not bad.
Not bad?
Good to see you.
All right. We appreciate you being with us this hour, as always. And a little bit later in the hour, as you heard in the billboard, our new general manager, Peter Domanowski, will be with us for a bit of a radio meet and greet. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. First up in our program, however, we're talking with Julie Sanchez, director of the, let me make sure I get this right, the City of Fort Wayne's Citizen Services Department. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Well, Ms. Sanchez, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we do want to invite our listeners to join the conversation here as well. If you have a question for Julie Sanchez or later in the hour for Peter Domanowski, the number is 260-452-1185. Or you can call us toll-free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Julie Sanchez, let's start with the basics here. What does the Office of Citizen Services do? What do you do?
Well, actually, let me give you just a little history. Sure. As far as the 311 number. The 311 number actually was established by the federal government in 1997, and it was a way to offload the 911 number. People would call 911, a lot of citizens, if they weren't sure where to go, and basically it would bog down the 911 number. And so in 1997, the 311 number was established so citizens could have a quick and easy way to access city services for non-emergency issues. And so that's kind of where we've come from as an industry. Citizen Services, we actually started our 311 call center in 2007. And that was a way, again, to just really try to be responsive to our citizens and to make sure that we were able to better serve them. So we began in 2007, and we've been going on since then.
Wow. So the 311 service was a federal mandate that localities were needed to implement over a certain period of time?
Yes. All right. And not all cities have 311 call centers, but we're very fortunate that our city government thought it was very important and made the investment so that our citizens could actually have such efficient access to city services.
Mm-hmm. Bob Kaler.
You know, I've heard from police or police dispatchers for years that they have been burdened here and other places with, you know, calls for information that they're not in charge of, let alone, you know, for the purposes of relieving loneliness or, you know, they're just oddball calls.
Right.
Have you gotten a good sense of whether 311 has relieved the call burden on 911?
Yes, we actually work very closely with 911 and the 311 call center, and we have a good relationship, and when they do receive those non-emergency calls, they actually call us themselves and pass that call on to us. And so and it's the same thing for us, because sometimes we actually get emergency calls and we would partner with them and pass that call back to them. So we do have a good relationship, and they're more than willing to get those calls connected, get those people connected to where they need to be in citizen in the city.
Typically when folks call 311 or maybe call 911 and get transferred, and let's say, to 311, mm-hmm. what are they typically asking about? What range of issues do they call about?
Well, there's just a wide range of issues that they can call about from city services. Sometimes they just want information, and they'll call about streets or locations, any programming, news media that they've heard, they want clarification on. So just a wider a range of informational questions that they may ask. But many times they are asking as far as for certain services that they need done. So if they need, they see a pothole, you know, that is dangerous, they'll want that fixed, or a street light that's out in their neighborhood and cause for concern, they'll call 311 and notify us so that we can help get that resolved.
And in fact, such calls are encouraged.
Oh, definitely, definitely. We, in the call center, we've really kind of changed our focus, even with our name. When I first came on, we were the 311 call center, and now we're Citizen Service, because our focus isn't on the way that you reach us. It's just what we do. We're here to serve the citizens. And so we definitely encourage people that if you see something wrong, call us. It's not just about access now. We're using terms like engagement. It's about connecting with them to make improvements in their community.
How many calls per year does 311 get typically, say, in 2012, if you have those numbers?
And actually, in 2012, we received about 170,000 calls, but we've been growing. Actually, when the center started, it was about 65,000 calls, and it's progressed throughout the year. 2011 was our highest year because we actually rolled out with solid waste, the new garbage bins, and making sure everybody had the new recycling. So we knew that that year would be extremely high. And that year, last year, we had 200,000 calls in 2011, excuse me. But in 2012, we're still up there. Close to 200, we had 170,000 calls. And so the citizens are getting to... know we're here and get comfortable with using us.
Wow, that's it seems like a tremendous number of calls for. Well, how big is the staff at the call center?
Well, it's really interesting. When I first came on, we only had 6 staff, and it was interesting because I was actually hired in April of 2011, and one of the things was really to try to stabilize the center because so many people were wanting to use the center, but we had very high call wait time, so up to an hour at times of wait.
Wow.
So the good thing is that people were trying to access us, and the bad thing is that they had to wait in some instances. But since that time, since I've been on in June of that year, we actually added a couple staffs. They were temps now, and this year they're full-time. But we were able to get that call wait time down to 5 minutes, and now it's significantly less than that. So we do have 8 staff at this time.
That's incredible. What kind of training do folks who staff the center What kind of training do they get?
Well, it's awesome. A lot of people wonder, when they think about the call staff, it's neat to visualize it because when you come in there and you see one of our call staff, what you'll see is 2 computer screens because we deal with that much information. So it is definitely heavy in technology. When I came on, we actually instituted a formal training session. So it's about 4 to 6 weeks. And what we do is we take about 2 weeks where we actually take the staff, introduce them to all of the departments. We have about 22 departments now that we support, and we mix that first few weeks up with having the departments come and talk to them. But actually, we get them out and we have them go with the meter reader, and they can actually see how that works. We have them see what a sewer line looks like. We take them out to the biosolid plant. We take them out to the water pollution. We want people to actually see and understand city government, and so that way when they take the calls, they'll do a better job.
And in fact, the ultimate goal of those operators is to help citizens understand city government as well.
Definitely, definitely. So we do that, and we have a great relationship. What we found out is when we start bringing the departments in, they actually got a chance to see the staff. Sometimes when people call, they just think, we're kind of that invisible face. But when we got to start having the staff, connect really closely with our departments, they became a person, and they began to see that we really have caring staff that are committed to doing a great job for not only our external customers, but for our internal customers as well.
We want to invite folks to call us today, at least during this hour, instead of 311. If you have a question for Julie Sanchez, the number is 260-452-1185 or 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. Sorry, I don't want to discourage people from calling 311, but we'd love to hear from them this hour as well. Bob Kaler.
So could you share a few items from the Hall of Fame of the strangest calls that you've received?
Well, let me think about, I am not personally a call taker, but I have to say with the staff, they have shared a lot of funny of stories. And I think the one that just kind of comes off that I can think of off the top of my head is one of the staff members said somebody called and they were really frantic and they said, "Snow White and the Seven Dwarves are missing." And they were like, "Would you repeat that?" They were like, "Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, they're missing." And, you know, it's like, where do we put that on a service request? But as soon as the guy calmed down, he was actually, those were his ornaments in front of his house. I guess someone had stolen them. And so we get a lot of funny calls. And one person said, one of the call takers said, one person called in and was like, "There is a kangaroo out in front of me, and I have not been drinking." There is, you know, so there's a lot of calls that we get that are really funny, and they make our days, but they keep us going.
Bob, you had something else.
What hours do you take calls?
We take calls currently from 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m.
What happens if somebody calls the number after hours?
If they call after hours, they just get connected. There's two things. They can actually be a part of the IVR, and there's some options to, if they need like a pothole or street department, there are some departments that they can still be connected directly to make sure that information gets to them. But also they are attached, connected to our 311 call center voicemail. And we review those voicemails first thing in the morning, the following day.
We do need to take a quick break here, but we'll continue the discussion when we return. And of course, in the second half of the show, NIPR's new GM, Peter Domanowski, will be with us as well. In the meantime, we'd love it if you got in touch with us. The number 260-452-1185 or toll free at 800-471-9264. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, Andrea Stewart talks with us about tracing her family tree back to the sugar trade in Barbados, where,
you know, one side of my family had owned another.
Stewart's family included slaves and slave owners. Her new book is Sugar in the Blood. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
This week on American Roots, we're down home in the big city, New York City, that is. Multi-instrumentalist Andy Statman explores bluegrass, klezmer, and free jazz. Then singer-pianist Nora Jones shares the countryside of life with the Little Willies, plus a lot of citified country songs and down-home urban tunes. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Monday night at 7 on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Take charge of your financial future. More information on Reinbold and Anderson on NIPR's homepage at nipr.fm. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, ensuring children and youth have opportunities and skills to succeed in school and life. UnitedWayAllenCounty.org/education.
It's 1222. This is Midday Matters on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. And during this half hour of the program, we're talking with City of Fort Wayne Director of Citizen Services, Julie Sanchez. Julie, thanks very much for taking time out for us today.
Thank you for having me.
And if you have a question or comment for Julie Sanchez, we'd love to hear from you this hour. The number is 260-452-1185 or 800-471-9264. Of course, you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Julie Sanchez, we talked in the first part of the program here about basically what Citizen Services does, what 311 is, and I think Bob Kaler had a follow-up.
What do you do when someone calls who isn't very proficient in English? Like, maybe they can get across that they have a question, but they can't understand a thorough answer from you.
What we do currently, we do have one of our staff members who speaks Spanish. However, it's not one of our call takers, but recently when our name changed, we did combine the mayor's community liaison, whose name is Palermo Galindo, who speaks Spanish. And so we're able to leverage that position with the call center, and in times where we need assistance with the Spanish, he's able to help us in there. But we do, you know, we would like to expand those services even more. That's one of our needs and the things that we'd like to do in the future.
And I know that, probably a lot of folks in Fort Wayne maybe haven't used the service yet, but I know outreach to, say, the immigrant community mm-hmm. in Fort Wayne is a big deal for a lot of government offices, a lot of nonprofits, other businesses as well. Have you been reaching out into, say, the Burmese community, the Spanish-speaking community in Fort Wayne, and how are those efforts?
Yes, we actually have, and we've done this on the call center front and also with our community liaison. As far as our call center, our staff members, they don't only take the calls, but they do also volunteer within the community. We go to the Hispanic Heritage Month, and we actually take booths and try to reach out in the various communities to make sure that they know what we do and how we can service them. And we've actually translated some of our brochures into Spanish, trying to make sure that we engage all the citizens in our community. As far as the Burmese, our community liaison has been working for a long time with the Burmese, engaging with them, actually meetings, going to meetings and different things, and making sure that they are up to date, not only engaged, the city is engaged with what they need as far as making sure we know what their needs are, but also trying to make sure if they have any needs as far as a call center, they know about it. Mm-hmm. So we do have some efforts that are going forward.
And in terms of the expansion of your office and in improving services, this is a time, for cities across the country of tight budgets. And yet your office is expanding. Do you, see that continuing? I'm sure you hope it continues.
We see it expanding as the need is, comes about. As far as when you say expanding, actually the staff that we had were redeployed, and that's just a terminology, means that they actually came from other city departments. Our six, we've had no turnover mm-hmm. since 2007. Mm-hmm. Even the community liaison that we have was already a community liaison in another department, who actually allowed us to have them. So we've tried to be very frugal in the way that when we hire, and we've just kind of redeploy our own city staff currently for that. So we do plan to continue. We've added, when I came on, we had 17 departments. Now we have 22. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to really take on as many departments as we can, so that we'll have that efficient access throughout the city for citizens to access city departments.
And just in the last few minutes of this segment of the program, we'd love it if you got in touch with us. If you have a question or comment for Julie Sanchez, the number 260-452-1185 or 800-471-9264. It looks like we have a caller on the line here. Let's get Pat on the phone. Pat, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi. I just wanted to thank Julie for the service. It's really been a godsend for neighborhood associations who are active.
Thank you.
Where we used to get calls from neighbors asking who to call. Now we can just say 311, and I think they're all starting to kind of get it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We love working with the neighborhoods. We've developed scripting, and that's what we say is a call center, the script that we follow, that is specific for neighborhoods, and that's because we worked with the co-chairs and the partnership chairs, and we've developed, like when a neighbor will call, we actually have just like a department, neighborhood services, and we put everything that we think a citizen may be interested in knowing specifically about their own neighborhood, their council person, any information. So we really do try to be neighborhood friendly, and I'm glad to hear that that's working.
And I'm glad you're so aware. That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
Pat,
thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, and have a good day.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. 260-452-1185 or 800-471-9264. Julie, can you talk a little more about that? Because, you know, when people think of 311, they think, oh, my garbage hasn't been picked up, or I need leaf pickup, something like that. But you're talking about services that are tailored specifically to specific parts of Fort Wayne.
Yes. One thing about, you know, the mayor, he's very concerned about neighborhoods and us reaching out, and I use the term engagement, using that center to engage our presidents. Through the mayor's direction, we actually have a specific line that when neighborhood presidents call, they can get a hold of our community liaison, and they can do specific works and projects with them. And just in general, our call center has been directed that when neighborhood presidents call, because they represent a larger number of people, that we really pay special attention to them and try to resolve their issues efficiently. And we know that when we pass a ticket and it's from a neighborhood president, our departments know that that's a priority.
Well, we're just about out of time here, but Julie Sanchez, I want to thank you very much for being with us on Midday Matters today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And we asked this question of just about everybody who's on this program. If folks want to find out more, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, this will be very easy. Three numbers. 311. Just dial 311.
Julie Sanchez, thank you so much again. We appreciate your time on Midday Matters today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break for the news. When we return, Peter Domanowski, the new general manager and president of Northeast Indiana Public Radio, will be here for a meet and greet. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne, August 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum online at indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah D'Elia with WBOI News. Bishop Emeritus John Darcy, who retired in 2010 after leading the Fort Wayne South Bend Catholic Diocese for 24 years, has died. He was 80 years old. Diocese spokesman Sean McBride says Darcy died Sunday of cancer at his home in Fort Wayne. Darcy announced last month he was battling a rare form of cancer, saying he had been diagnosed with cancer in his lungs and brain. He said the disease was discovered when he went to a Boston area hospital after feeling ill while visiting relatives. Bishop Kevin Rhodes, who succeeded Darcy, asked followers to pray for Darcy, his family, and loved ones. Rhodes says Darcy faced death with deep faith and a trust in God. Funeral arrangements are pending. A new study from a national research group suggests Indiana's overall tax structure is unfavorable to middle and low-income Hoosiers. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
A report from the Institute on Taxation and Fiscal Policy says, taking into consideration Indiana's income, sales, property, and excise taxes, the effective tax rate means low-income Hoosiers pay 2.5 times more than high-income people. Indiana Institute for Working Families senior policy analyst Derek Thomas says there are ways to remedy the disparity, including changing the state's flat income tax system.
One thing that we recommended was enacting the $25,000 no tax floor so that families making below that amount owe no taxes.
Indiana Senate Tax and Fiscal Policy Chair Brant Hirschman suggests the study may be biased, saying Indiana's tax climate is one of the most attractive in the country, and he absolutely rejects enacting a tax floor.
I'm not trying to punish the poor, but I think everybody ought to contribute something to the operations of the government services that they use.
Hirschman also cited the benefits of the state's existing sales tax exemptions for food and medical costs. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
The number of Indiana residents whose gun permit requests were denied by state police has nearly doubled in the past 2 years amid an increase in permit applications. State police last year denied 2,028 gun permit applications statewide, or nearly double the 1,054 applications denied by the agency the year before. Commander of Firearms Lieutenant Mike Rogers says state police are checking applications even more carefully now that more of them are coming in. He says the increase in applications has prompted state police to take longer to approve the applications and to make sure all the information is correct. Rogers says gun permit denials have increased in recent years as new technology allows state police to better find information residents left off their applications. Ivy Tech Community College is asking the Indiana Department of Revenue to divert tax refunds of students who owe the college money. Chief Financial Officer Chris Rule says the college loses out on about $12 million each year because of student-owed debt. That's about 1.5% of the college's general fund. He says collection agencies only recover about $1 million a year. Most of the money owed is related to federal financial aid owed by students who drop classes but fail to repay the assistance. The statewide college has implemented a tax intercept program in an effort to improve those collections. Rule says Purdue University and other colleges use the program and predicts that it will be a significant tool for Ivy Tech. You're listening to 89.1 FM WBOY Fort Wayne. Now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sean Beter.
It's 12:34. This is Midday Matters on WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Monday afternoon. With me in studio, as always, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Bob, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, looking forward to meeting the new GM.
That's right. This segment of the program, we'll be talking with Northeast Indiana Public Radio's brand new president and general manager. Hasn't even officially started the job yet, but he's here for a visit. It's Peter Domanowski. Peter, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Sean and Bob, thanks for asking me to come on. I appreciate it.
Now, I'm sure a lot of folks will be interested to meet you by phone or via other means today. And we'd love to hear from them, 260-452-1185, or toll-free at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Now, Peter, let's start at the beginning, as they say. Why Fort Wayne? This is you've been not at a station for quite a while here. What drew you to a place like Fort Wayne?
Well, as you alluded to, Sean, I've actually owned my own businesses for the last 25 plus years, primarily doing research and consulting for public radio and other nonprofits. But as in all of our lives, everything has a season, and I realized that wasn't necessarily as universally satisfying as it has been. So I started looking to return to a station environment, looked at several opportunities, and this was the one that I chose as my favorite. And fortunately, the board and the staff here chose to have me. So far, that's worked out very well. The reasons why are both professional and personal. Professionally, a couple of things that I think this organization has going for it is that, unlike some public radio stations, it is a community licensee. So we're much closer in touch with and directly responsive to the community, and that appeals to me.
And explain to folks who may not know what exactly that means.
Obviously, commercial radio stations are owned by profit-making corporations, but nonprofit radio stations and public service radio stations like public radio or NPR stations, whatever you want to call them, are governed by usually a board of directors, or they're owned either perhaps by a university or maybe some other governmental authority like a school system or something along those lines. However, stations like Northeast Indiana Public Radio, when I say they're a community licensee, there's a board of directors that obviously is in and of the community that we serve that holds the license to broadcast, as well as keeps us very, very responsive in terms of their governance, making sure that both the businesses run properly as well as that we are doing our utmost to serve the members of the community.
Mm-hmm. And most public radio stations, correct me if I'm wrong, are not community licensees. They're either attached to a public television station or to perhaps a university.
You're absolutely right, Sean. That is the case.
Now, I put the cart a little bit before the horse here. You mentioned that you've owned your own businesses, but you've been all over the public radio business. Tell us a little bit about your history in this business.
I started in public radio in 1975 when none of us knew anything, and myself included. Literally, public radio was very, very new, only about 5 years old. It was public radio was created almost as a last-minute afterthought, in the Public Broadcasting Act of 1967 that President Johnson signed. It was primarily initially envisioned just as a TV sort of piece of legislation, and public radio thrown in there at the last minute. So we were still very much in the infancy of public radio, where we changed formats every 2 hours. We had no idea how people used radio. We didn't know anything. As the years went along, in 1980, it was kind of a pivotal year, at least in my career. I moved to Orlando, Florida, to start a radio station called WMFE, because at that time, Orlando was the largest community in the entire U.S. that did not have a full-time public radio station. And due to a fantastic staff and a lot of hard work, from signing that station on in July of 1980, in less than 2.5 years, we'd become the most listened-to public radio station in our market size in the entire USA. That started getting us and myself some attention, and people would call me and ask for advice. And after a number of years, it's almost an apocryphal story that any consultant tells. You say, well, you called me to ask me a question, I'll give you the answers, but it'll cost you $5,000. And they say yes. And if that happens often enough, sometimes you decide to start your own business. And that's what I did in the late 80s, and with only a couple of small interruptions, have been doing continuously up until now.
And you were not only in Orlando, you've also programmed in Chicago as well.
Yes, in the early 90s. In fact, I've made a practice in my life and career never to say never, because you really don't know what's coming tomorrow, what's going to come through the door later today. I had just started my consulting business full time less than a year previously, and I received a call from WFMT Chicago, one of the most well-known classical stations in the world, really, who at that time was having severe financial trouble. They were nearly bankrupt, severe trouble and dissension in their programming. And they asked me would I like to come up and take a look and consider being the program director. Well, long story short, I did, and I acted as their program director for a couple of years, and hopefully played a small role in both stabilizing the station financially and improving its programming service to the Chicagoland community.
We're talking with our new president and general manager, Peter Domanowski, who has not officially started his new position yet. Peter, you're going to be starting early March.
March 4th, Monday, I believe, is the official date.
But he's up here to take a look around, to dive right in, as they say. And we want to hear from you today. If you have a question or comment for Peter Domanowski. The number is 260-452-1185. You can always call us toll-free, of course, 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Before we go to a break here, Peter, just a few more resume items. There are some folks who may know that there are a lot of associations in public radio, the public radio news directors. There are associations for development folks.
Also, we have alphabet and acronym soup in our business.
Exactly. There's one, however, called the Public Radio Program Directors Association. I believe that's right, which you helped found.
Yes, I did, Sean. As I mentioned earlier, there was a time in public radio where we knew nothing. And again, I'm not exaggerating. We didn't. That became a concern to many of us in the early and mid 80s. We had no idea how people were using our products and services. We wanted to serve them better, but really didn't know how. And myself and several other program directors who had achieved a modicum of success over the years in the business got together and said, let's do something about this. And that, over several years, involved to what's known now as PRPD, or Public Radio Program Directors Association, where we try to disseminate information about listening, about programming, about how to serve the community better. And I'm very proud of being a part of that, because that organization is still very strong, very active, and very thriving in public radio today. And our listeners are the beneficiaries of that.
We're going to take just a quick break here. We'll continue our discussion with Peter Domanowski in just a few minutes. In the meantime, we hope you'll get in touch. 260-452-1185 or online, facebook.com/middaymatters, on Twitter @middaymatters, or you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Stay with us. The program continues in 2 minutes.
On the next Fresh Air, Andrea Stewart talks with us about tracing her family tree back to the sugar trade in Barbados, where,
you know, one side of my family had owned another.
Stewart's family included slaves and slave owners. Her new book is Sugar in the Blood. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
In the week ahead, we'll launch our annual Oscar Doc series and bring you the people behind the year's top documentaries.
This album had in it lyrics that almost set us free.
We'll start with Searching for Sugar Man. I'm Neil Conan. This year's Oscar documentaries in the week ahead on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I wonder how many. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
This is Jason Wilbur, guitarist for John Prine and host of the weekly radio series In Search of a Song. I'm proud to tell you that you can now hear In Search of a Song every Monday evening at 10 p.m. right here on Northeast Indiana Public Radio. Each week you can listen in as I talk with recording artists about the trials and revelations that have shaped their lives and their music. It's a fascinating journey, and I hope you'll join us as we go In Search of a Song.
It's a quarter till 1 o'clock. This is Midday Matters on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. And during this part of the program, we're talking with our brand new president and general manager, Peter Domanowski. And we want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment for Peter during the next 15 minutes, do get in touch. Share your thoughts. 260-452-1185 or toll free at 800-471-9264. All the digital means are available as well. Facebook.com/Midday Matters or on Twitter @Midday Matters. And of course, you can email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Bob Kaler.
Well, since you've been around in public radio, since its infancy through
almost
through its adolescence, and we'll think it's still in its youth, we'll be optimistic. What do you see as some of the some of the trends in programming that have helped public radio become so indispensable to so many people in the way that they make it a part of their day?
Not to dismiss or ignore some of the formats that are very important to a number of our listeners and listeners to public radio nationwide, but really the fundamental strength and the main franchise of public radio really is NPR News, whether that's news produced literally by NPR, programs like Morning Edition or All Things Considered, whether it's programming produced by other vendors nationally, other networks nationally, done in the so-called NPR style, or whether that's news produced by people like Sean and his contemporaries all around the country at stations that cover their community the way that NPR covers the nation and the world. When we do listener surveys and when we talk to listeners in focus groups, when we look at the programming that gets the most loyalty, the most listenership, not in every single case, but more often than not, NPR and NPR-style news rises to the top because, especially in the way the media world has evolved today, it is one of the few places that many individuals feel they can get fact-based, objective reporting that covers many issues from not just two sides, but from many sides and allows people to make up their own mind about how they feel about those issues.
And Bob, we were talking a bit over the break too. I'm curious, you know, just in your limited time with us so far, you've only been with us a few days now. What do you see as the strengths of this station and Northeast Indiana Public Radio more broadly in keeping that community conversation going?
Well, Sean, it may be a cliche, but I'm very sincere about it. Our major strength, number one, is our people inside the station. I've received an extremely friendly, warm welcome here. I can already tell, since I've visited a number of stations over the years, you might say, that we have a dedicated, hardworking staff that really, really cares about providing the best service to this community. Now, we may find down the road that there are different ways we can go about taking care of some of those tasks that allow us to do a better service, but everyone here is absolutely 101% dedicated to doing a great job for our listeners. Obviously, the community supports this organization over the years, and that has to be a major strength because, as we all know, literally, without community support, without the support of individual listeners, families, without the support of enlightened local businesses, without the support of foundations and other funders of the like, public radio literally cannot exist. That base is here, obviously, and we hope to strengthen that base in the future.
Looks like we have a question from a listener on our Facebook page here. And of course, if you'd like to submit a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you this hour. It's facebook.com/middaymatters or get on the phones. Give us a call, 260-452-1185. Kelly says, can you speak to any new programming or approaches Peter has in mind to sustain existing listeners and engage new ones? And that's the $25,000 question, is it not, is being able to serve both those purposes?
Well, it would probably be a little bit presumptuous to me, as I'm starting my fourth day in the job today, to say that I've analyzed everything, figured it all out, and have a specific plan to go forward. And since that would be presumptuous and it would be incorrect, I won't go there. But, you know, I can tell you that some of the things we're going to do is while – I have no reason to believe that Northeast Indiana Public Radio has not been audience-focused and, you know, trying to be in tune with the community in the past. We are going to intensify and focus those efforts even more, you know, through any means which is available to us, whether it's looking at listening reports and finding out who is listening when and which programs are most valuable to our listeners and maybe some that aren't particularly valuable. Every station has programs that are stronger and weaker in terms of the way you know, listeners utilize them. We'll be looking intensively and consistently at that. We'll be looking at the way that we promote those programs on the air. We do a fairly good job of that now. I think, frankly, we could do a better and more efficient job of that. So that's another thing that we'll be doing, and basically trying to adopt state-of-the-art, state-of-the-industry practices in every single thing that we do. Will that happen in the first week or first month that I'm here? No, of course, that's impossible. It will take a while to implement that, but in discussions with the community, in discussions with staff members and other knowledgeable professionals around the country, I'm confident we'll get there.
When you talk about audience-focused programming, kind of re-enlivening that audience focus, you and I have spoken before, that wasn't always the case in this business.
No, back when we didn't know anything, back in the 70s and 80s, a lot of programming, I would say the vast, vast majority of it, was promoted out of self-interest. For example, hypothetically, you might have a university station, and the oboe professor wanted to be on the radio. So he or she would gather a lot of records, mostly featuring the oboe, coincidentally. And, they'd come to a program. And while I have nothing against oboe music or anything like that, the idea, it was kind of a self-interest rather than a listener interest that came first. As public broadcasters, it's always crucial that we serve the audience and please the audience rather than worrying about pleasing ourselves.
Bob Kaler.
Yeah, do you have a sense of whether as a whole public radio is ahead of the curve or behind the times in exploiting the opportunities that the internet makes available for serving audiences?
I think probably both in different ways. One thing, and this is just an impression, is that over the past several years, NPR, and by NPR I specifically mean National Public Radio, the network, has placed a mammoth, mammoth emphasis on multi-platform media. Do I think that's a bad idea? No, of course not. Do I think in some cases maybe they've gone maybe a little too far in that and not emphasizing their traditional channels where still more than 90% of the audience service takes place on radio? Yeah, maybe in some cases, in my opinion, they have. And that's, I think, maybe an important thing for me to say specifically. In no way am I discounting the importance or the potential of social media, of the internet, of multi-platforms, of new technology. But the fact is, nationwide and at virtually any public station that you go to, well over 90% of all the listening and all the service still happens via the traditional means of FM radio.
Every 6 months or so, we do a program where we kind of take a second look at what we do here, what public radio is doing more broadly, and we always ask this question: what are the big challenges that we have ahead of us? In previous cycles, it's been we've talked about defunding, we've talked about other issues like this. Public radio is not really in crisis right now. But what do you see as some of the big challenges ahead for us and for this business more broadly?
Funding for any nonprofit is always first and foremost. So that's no different for us and no different really for any public station across the country. Of course, our funding challenges are not simply to sustain what we do because we are all in this industry, not necessarily to make huge salaries, but to serve the public as best we can. All of us can always think of far, far more ways that we could do a better job of serving the public than our current budget allows. So we come at it from a positive intention, but it never seems like that we have quite enough money in the till to do all the things that we think would benefit the community. So that's an ongoing and continual challenge. Another challenge indirectly involves social media. And the fact is, when there are more media options, fewer people will utilize any and all media. If you look at what's happened over the past several years, there are slightly fewer people using radio a week. It used to be in radio's heyday that literally 98% of all Americans tuned to radio at least once a week. That number is now down somewhere in around 87%, if I recall. Still mammoth and huge, but less than it used to be. And that's not necessarily because radio is doing a bad job. It's because there are so many more places for people to spend their time and to put their eyes and ears.
Just about 5 minutes left in the program here, and if any of our listeners want to get in touch with us, well, now's the time, 260-452-1185 if you have a question or comment, or you can call us toll-free at 800-471-9264. Of course, our Facebook page is always up, as is our Twitter account as well, and if you'd like, you can email middaymatters@nipr.com. WBOI.FM. Peter Domanowski, in just the last few minutes of the program here, I have to ask you, were a programmer, you're interested in programming that serves the audience. Tell us some of your favorite shows. I mean, what are the things in public radio that really get you excited about being a part of this business?
I get excited anytime I hear content that I know will impact people's lives. All of us in public radio and many, many listeners, I'm sure, have heard the phrase driveway moments. That's, of course, the moments where people are sitting in their driveway or sitting in the parking lot outside their office or what have you, and they can't go inside because they absolutely have to finish listening to a program or some reporting or what have you that's on the air right then. Creating as many of those driveway moments for our listeners as we can, it's still something that gets me excited as a programmer even after all these years. And obviously, I also enjoy the weekend entertainment programs. I like Car Talk, and I like Wait. Doug Berman is one of the geniuses in our industry. Doug, in case you don't know, is the producer and creator of both of those programs. And we have obviously some great music programming that I enjoy, tuning into. I heard over the holidays Rob Martinez doing a fantastic Christmas program, which I really, really enjoyed and got a kick out of. So it really runs the gamut. When we do great stuff, it makes me happy.
We have a few callers on the line. We'll try to get to as many folks as we can in just the last few minutes of the program here. Let's open the phones and go to Fred. Fred, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Thank you. I like to say the reason I became interested in NPR was because during the election I wanted a unbiased, fair presentation of what was going on. And NPR was the only one that did that to me.
Well, and Peter, this a familiar chorus.
Yes, obviously, I think most people would agree, regardless of their political opinion, that the vast majority of commercial channels now have somewhat of a specific viewpoint, shall we say. And while we don't always succeed, I know that NPR strongly tries to be as unbiased and objective as possible, and we do the same thing here at our station, Sean.
Fred, we appreciate the call and your listenership as well.
Well, thank you.
All right. All the best. Have a good day. Let's go to another caller here. Let's see if we have time for Richard. Richard, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Yes, good afternoon. The purpose of my call is to find out if the program is going to change and add more jazz back into the lineup. The station came on air, it played a lot of jazz, and especially like on Saturday mornings and what have you. And I've been a listener since the inception of the station. And I've seen over the years, especially this past year, with this adding BBC on at night. And a lot of times at night, where you were playing jazz. And those of us, at least I, when I listen to WBOI, I love NPR. I mean, because of I can get all the information I need, and then especially in this area, the lack of that type of music, the jazz, the different varieties, and they had all types of shows. I had kind of pulled back from WBOI because of it. I still listen to NPR, but as far as that goes. Yeah, I went to Sirius Radio so I can listen to that, which,
Richard, I'm sorry, I have to cut you off here. We're in the last 40 seconds of the program. Peter Domanowski, a brief response.
Richard, thanks for the call. As I said earlier, I'm in my infancy at this job. I can't tell you what's going to happen in the future, whether there'll be more jazz, less jazz, or the same amount of jazz. But I can promise you we're going to thoroughly study the listening habits of the community, try to find out ways we can serve you and the community better, and take whatever steps necessary to make sure that happens.
Richard, we appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And thanks for your listenership as well. Peter Domanowski, we're out of time, but thank you very much for your time. I'm Sean Beter. And for Bob Kaler, this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, WBOI, Fort Wayne. We're coming up on 1 o'clock.